Welcome to Sprouts, radio from the grassroots, a weekly program that showcases radio productions from this and many other independent community stations across the country. We bring local stories to a national audience from a different location every week. I'm Dori Smith of Talk Nation Radio, produced in Storrs, Connecticut.
It's a case where law licenses should be removed from those who helped facilitate war crimes.
Torture is illegal under U.S. and international law. Yet Bush administration officials tried to bend the language of the law and make it seem as if it were legal. Today on Sprouts, attorney Kevin Zeese of Voters for Peace and attorney Marjorie Cohn of the National Lawyers Guild talk about the effort to get lawyers who supported and promoted torture disbarred. Then Amnesty International spokesperson Genevieve Montree on the transfer of Guantanamo detainee Ahmed Ghilani to New York for trial.
We filed complaints against 12 attorneys from the Bush-Cheney administration, various departments, the White House and Department of Justice in particular, and we're seeking their disbarment because of their involvement in facilitating torture, which is a war crime. And we think that people who use their legal license to facilitate war crimes should not have a legal license.
Complaints have been filed with bar associations in various states asking for disbarment or disciplinary action for 12 attorneys, and that number could grow. The list includes former Bush administration attorneys general John Ashcroft, Alberto Gonzalez, and Michael Mukasey, as well as the assistant attorney general in the legal counsel department, Jay Bybee. Over the coming months, bar associations will likely do an internal investigation, and if they decide to go ahead with disciplinary action, there will likely be a public hearing. The coalition demanding accountability represents over 1 million people. They say they decided to take action because the federal government seems unable and unwilling to act. If attorney Kevin Zeese and members of the anti-torture movement get what they want, the attorneys who helped the Bush administration explain or cover up acts of torture in legalese will be held accountable. In addition to the former attorneys general, they also want Homeland Security Director Michael Chertoff disbarred, as well as Justice Department official John Yoo, former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy Douglas Feith, and Stephen Bradbury, David Addington, Alice Fisher, William Haynes II, and Timothy Flanagan. Attorney Zeese explained the evidence in the complaints made to the bar associations.
We submitted with each complaint a 3-inch binder about 600 pages long that included a range of evidence, internal Department of Justice memos that have been made public, Red Cross report, U.S. congressional reports. It's interesting about this torture policy is that we have a lot of information. But the thing is, I don't think we have all the information. And I expect when we hear all the information, it will be even worse than it currently looks. I think the worst is still not being shown to us. So one of the goals of these proceedings is to continue to add to the database of information about this torture policy.
John David Ashcroft, you say, breached his legal duty and violated the D.C. rules of professional conduct by advocating for immoral and unethical extended and enhanced interrogation techniques amounting to torture.
This is pretty much true with all of the 12 that we are making the allegations against. It's not any breaking new ground, really, as much as it's trying to begin to apply the rule of law to their actions. And that's what we think is the antidote to the toxicity that the United States is facing with this history of war crimes. What we say is that there are a number of statutes and treaties and the U.S. Constitution that have been violated by the torture policy. Torture is clearly defined by the law, and in order for these folks to let this torture policy go forward to facilitate this torture, they had to write legal justifications that provided cover, and they did that by rewriting what torture meant rather than applying what the actual Convention on Torture says. They rewrote it to try to minimize what they were doing, but in fact what they did was very clearly torture. Waterboarding, for example, has been used as a torture technique since the Spanish Inquisition, and in fact it was Japanese officials convicted in prosecutions by the United States and sentenced to death as a result of waterboarding. So it's not a new idea to say waterboarding is torture. Also, the U.S. Army has a training program that prepares troops for potential torture, and the trainers of the SEER program describe waterboarding as torture as well. So it's not really a big debate except by those who want to deny it exists. It's not a big debate that these activities are torture. When you keep people awake, when you put them in cold water, when you slam them against walls, when you simulate something that essentially is drowning, when you do all those kind of things, it's torture. And it got pretty serious. Human Rights Watch reports that 98 people died in the custody of the United States in Iraq and Afghanistan. And I'm sure that some of those we will find were torture-related cases. And that is something we have to face up to if we're going to eliminate it from our body politic.
Now, were these lawyers and members of the Bush administration able to move things around in the law so that it's now impossible to prosecute in these cases?
I don't think it's impossible to prosecute. In fact, I think that's the solution, is appointing a special prosecutor, whether the Congress mandates or the Department of Justice decides to go ahead and do it on their own. That is the solution, is to take this out of the political realm so it's not a partisan issue between the Democrats and Republicans, and there's no fear of Nancy Pelosi being complicit because she was told about it. Take it away from all that and apply the rule of law and the facts. And when you put the facts together with the rule of law, you know whether or not crimes were committed. That is really the ultimate solution. The area where I think that the previous administration kind of warped the law was the very simple question of what is torture and what is allowable. They first tried to say that the Geneva Convention and the Convention Against Torture, which are two treaties that we signed onto that prohibit torture, and once we approve a treaty in the United States, they become the law of our land. We have to obey that law like a federal statute. And they tried to first argue that they didn't apply to the alleged terrorists and al-Qaeda members that were being held by the U.S. government. The Supreme Court ruled on a case in 2006 that changed that and made it very clear that these treaties did apply to al-Qaeda members being held by the United States. So that was a very important decision by the Supreme Court in the Hamdi case that really turned that on its head. And the second thing they tried to do was to take the standard laws that federal government has prohibited torture. One is the federal law against torture, and the other is the federal law against war crimes, which includes torture. And they tried to essentially narrow the definition of torture in order to say that because they're not causing organ damage or death, they're not torturing. Of course, that is quite a significant narrowing from what the law really allows. If you're doing physical and mental harm to people with the intention of gathering information, that's torture for interrogation purposes and would be illegal. So they tried that. And that's what we'll see is it needs to be tested, I think, in this and other prosecutions that might come about. Then, of course, we have the broader problem with torture, which is the Eighth Amendment to the United States Constitution, which prohibits cruel and unusual punishment. That seems to be exactly what torture is. And I don't think, you know, slamming somebody against the wall, putting them in ice, putting them in heat, loud music, keeping them awake, essentially beating them up, and then waterboarding them 180 times over 30 days. 180 times over 30 days one person was waterboarded. That is all cruel and unusual punishment. So those are the areas where I think they tried to warp things. But I think once the rule of law is applied independently of politics, it's pretty clear that what was going on violated the law. And I think that everybody involved probably knew that. We as citizens can only we can't file criminal charges. We can't appoint a special prosecutor. We can advocate for that. We can organize for that. We can push our elected officials to push for that. And we're doing that on our website, votersforpeace.us. You can see the Stop Torture box up on the site, and you can click that and take action yourself to urge your legislators to push for a special prosecutor. You can urge the Attorney General and the President to push for a special prosecutor.
You have also criticized the role of General McChrystal, appointed by the Obama administration to head operations in Afghanistan, and have had criticism for the Obama administration over the release of certain photographs, right?
President Obama has now decided not to release 20,000 photos and videos of torture and abuse of prisoners by the U.S. officials. He's essentially hiding evidence of war crimes, even though courts have said those should be released. Now, the problem, we don't want people being able to say that this was a few bad apples. Very clearly, this was not a few bad apples. This was a policy of torture. Releasing 20,000 pictures will demonstrate that this is, in fact, a policy of torture.
Your complaint says Chertoff advanced a new legal policy that regarded due process of any kind as an undue burden, and granted terror suspects neither the rights of criminal defendants nor prisoners of war. could you get him disbarred? I mean, what could happen to Michael Chertoff?
That's what we're seeking, and this is essentially what I mentioned earlier, and Donald Rumsfeld was the one who kind of made a joke out of this, you know, how quaint the Geneva Convention was. It's a relic of the past. Well, thankfully, the U.S. Supreme Court ruled quite clearly that, in fact, the Geneva Convention, the Convention Against Torture, actually do apply to al-Qaeda members being held by the United States. And so Chertoff's effort to rewrite the law and to take the United States out of a treaty it has signed on to and approved and is now the law of the land and has been the law of the land for decades, you know, was an obvious overstepping. So that's the problem that I think I have with all these lawyers is what they were advocating was obviously, I didn't even pass the straight face test of what the law says and what the law is. As it becomes reviewed, I think that will become more and more obvious by independent judges who can look at this and hopefully an independent prosecutor look at this. You know, these folks were doing their best to rewrite the law through legal memoranda, which, of course, does not really rewrite the law, but it's their analysis to try to make it look like the law is different than what it says. And they were trying to rewrite the law to allow themselves to break the law. It's almost like a, you know, mafia a lawyer telling his client how to break the law. That's what this, to me, looks like. And obviously, I'm not the decision maker. It'll be up to the Bar Association to do their own investigations and to decide, you know, what they see on this front. And they may have a different view than I do. But there are a lot of lawyers who are taking the position I'm taking, which is that this is a clear black and white case. And it's a case where law licenses should be removed from those who help to facilitate war crimes. It's a minimal first step, in my view. We also need to go to the level of prosecutions, but at least as a first step, we want to see the bar associations not become complicit themselves by not taking action on this.
What about the two legal department figures in the Justice Department, John Yoo and Jay Bybee?
Well, those are the two that probably get the most attention because their names are on the memoranda that were written to justify torture and provide a legal cover for torture. And in fact, they are the only two of the 12 that we've filed complaints against that are being examined by the Justice Department's Office of Professional Responsibility for the last 5 years, which is an extremely long time. OPR has been working on a report on these two lawyers because they were the most hands-on. We go beyond them because we don't think it's fair just to target those whose names are on things, just like it's not fair just to target those who actually did the torturing. This was a policy that came from the top down, and these guys were essentially soldiers, attorney soldiers, but soldiers in putting that policy in place. And so they get the most attention, and I think we expect that the Office of Professional Responsibility will be issuing its own recommendation on whether or not these two lawyers should be disbarred. And if they do, that will certainly help that move forward. And if they do, we'll also use that to push the Office of Professional Responsibility to look beyond those two at all the lawyers up the chain of command. These guys are essentially the bottom of the chain of command because their names are on the documents, the memoranda that were published most recently by the Obama administration.
You're listening to Sprouts, Radio from the Grassroots, a weekly program bringing you local radio productions of national interest. Former Vice President Cheney has bitterly defended the Bush administration on so-called enhanced interrogation techniques.
To call this a program of torture is to libel the dedicated professionals who have saved American lives and to cast terrorists and murderers as innocent victims. What's more, to completely rule out enhanced interrogation in the future is unwise in the extreme. It is recklessness cloaked in righteousness and would make the American people less safe.
Attorney Kevin Zeese, what is he really bringing to the table there, and is he doing himself any good?
I'll tell you, you know, watching Dick Cheney in the last few weeks has really reminded me of a criminal returning to the scene of the crime. And returning to the scene of the crime in order to wipe away the evidence, you know, clean up the fingerprints, put up walls and barriers to preventing an investigation, preventing a prosecution. And it really feels to me like he complains too much, that there's some reason why he feels an urgent need to be doing that kind of name-calling and expressing how what a mistake it would be for there to be a prosecution or investigation or even a public hearing, that we can't relitigate these issues, blah, 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 blah. He's a guy who feels like someone has something to hide, and I think his actions are so unusually extreme for a former vice president or president. Usually those folks, when they lose the election, they kind of disappear, and you don't hear from them again until they write their biography, and they don't come out and criticize the next president and vice president. They remain silent, and that's what most have done. But Cheney has taken a different approach. I think the reason he's taken a different approach is that this seems like all roads lead back to the vice president's office. So I think that we should watch his actions with that kind of a image in mind of the criminal returning to the scene of the crime. So there's nothing good about torture. If it, you know, it doesn't, you know, not only is it illegal, but it's counterproductive on almost every level you can look at. I can't think of one rational reason why torture is something you even would pursue. It doesn't work. And you look at CIA and FBI interrogators have come forward to say that they were doing fine getting information from these people we end up waterboarding before they were ordered to start the torture techniques. They got more information beforehand. And then to make it even worse, and the Senate Armed Services put this in their report on this, that the focus of the interrogation was not preventing future attacks in America. It was providing a link between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda. So it was being used as a way to justify an illegal war. And in fact, if you look at Colin Powell's testimony before the UN, a key part of that came from the CIA and this guy who just recently reportedly killed himself in Libya, this informant who was tortured in Egypt and said there was a link between Saddam and al-Qaeda when there really wasn't, and that made it into Colin Powell's testimony before the UN. So, in fact, this war was justified on false information gained by torture. If we had not been involved in relying on that false information, we may not have even gotten into this war. And the hundreds of billions that have been lost, the thousands of lives that have been lost of Americans, the millions of Iraqi lives lost and forced out of their homes. I mean, all that wouldn't have happened. And the root cause was misinformation, in part from torture. And I think that by itself is the kind of indication that we shouldn't be torturing. It's counterproductive and can get us into major mistakes, major foreign policy blunders like the Iraq War.
Which brings us to Douglas Feith, the former Undersecretary of Defense for Policy, and the complaint that you have submitted against him.
In the complaint, we have specifics on Douglas Feith, and he was a neocon who was one of the architects of the Iraq War, and he's an advocate for attacking Iran, and he's pretty much an extremist and all this stuff. He's also a lawyer who was part of the process of advising on this interrogation policy, this torture interrogation policy. So he's in there because of those acts relating to torture. But I think that this whole neocon cabal that was in charge of our foreign policy needs to be looked at in a much more a different light than they were when they were in power. Now that we've seen the impact of their policies on the region and on the United States, because there's no question the United States is a less safe country, a less stable country, certainly economically, in large part because of these foreign policies that Douglas Feith and others put forward. And we are spending so many billions of dollars now, $12 billion a month on Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan that we don't have, that we borrowed. We have to borrow to use. And the economic collapse is certainly in part because we've been misspending on these foreign adventures. And Douglas Feith is one of the key guys behind that. And he's also one of the key guys behind this torture policy. So that's what we're pursuing him. And we hope that the bar associations will, you know, do their own investigation, hopefully get even more information, and make a decision that holds him accountable. Yeah, in fact, more and more people and organizations are signing on. If you go to this disbartorturelawyers.com website, you can sign on as an individual, or if you have an organization, you can join in. We're hearing from more and more people who want to join in, and there, as I said, there'll be another round of complaints filed. There'll be more information filed about the current people we've already filed against, and we want to have more people involved in this. It's going to take a lot of effort by citizens to remove this toxicity from the body politic, and the only way we can do that is by beginning to apply the rule of law. And these bar complaints are a first step in that direction, but certainly not the last step. We need to go beyond that to public hearings and a special prosecutor as well in order to really remove this poison from our politics.
You've also written that these memos that were signed in some cases by the attorneys you're citing have now been repudiated by the Department of Justice, the White House, the Department of Defense, and other experts in the field. Are you implying there that your proceedings might have the support of some of these departments of the government?
I have no doubt that there are people in the government and former government officials who do support our efforts. Some have written about it and some have spoken about it, so I know that's true. And I do appreciate President Obama repudiating torture. Sadly, there are reports that torture is still ongoing. We have articles on the VotersForPeace.us website that describe some of the ongoing torture that is being done in the name of the United States government. So despite his effort to stop it, it may not have been stopped yet. And so that's once again why it's so important to bring this out of the public and have a discussion and a debate and in the end, you know, apply the rule of law, because that's the cleanest way to break it off. If it becomes very clear that torture is illegal under U.S. and international law, then it's much less likely to happen again. And if we don't make that point clear, if in the end we just repudiate the policy and then move forward, there's no guarantee that a future administration won't take the same course that the Bush administration took. And in fact, you know, torture is not as new as the Bush administration. There are CIA torture manuals that go back to the 1950s. At the School of America's Watch, we've been training Latin American governments on torture. When we had a coup d'etat in Iran and removed the elected leader of Iran in 1953, we replaced him with the Shah, and then we trained the Shah's police on torture techniques. So torture has a much deeper history than we want to admit, and removing them from power and having Obama say no more torture is not enough. There are too many people in government who've been involved in the past. And so we really have to do a lot more if we're going to prevent this from happening again and become a country that reaches the ideals that we hope for, rather than the country that continues to make the mistakes of the past.
Attorney Kevin Zeese represents Voters for Peace, the lead organization, calling for the disbarment of lawyers who have supported or promoted torture. National Lawyers Guild President Marjorie Cohn explained her group's history on this issue.
The National Lawyers Guild was first to call for the disbarment of John Yoo for his participation in justifying and rationalizing torture, which violates our laws, constitutes war crimes. And a National Lawyers Guild lawyer filed a complaint with the state bar in Pennsylvania, where he is licensed to practice. That complaint has been dismissed pending the release of the report from the Office of Professional Responsibility, which it is rumored is quite critical of him and his work. The National Lawyers Guild in San Francisco filed a complaint against William Haynes, another one of the so-called torture lawyers. So the National Lawyers Guild, supports a special prosecutor to investigate and prosecute Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, Rice, and the other officials who authorized the torture policy, in addition to the lawyers, the legal mercenaries, I guess you would say, who gave them legal cover, so to speak.
In the PBS special, Torturing Democracy, produced by the award-winning Sherry Jones, narrator Peter Coyote notes significant legal challenges to the Bush administration's policies on detention and enhanced interrogation.
This debate is occurring because of the Supreme Court's ruling that said that we must conduct ourselves under the Common Article 3 of the Geneva Convention. And that Common Article 3 says that, you know, there will be no outrages upon human dignity. It's very vague. What does that mean? Outrages upon human dignity. That's a statement that is wide open to interpretation.
No trial has been set.
In 2006, the Supreme Court ruled that Guantanamo's detainees were entitled to the protections of the Geneva Conventions. One justice warned that violations of Common Article 3 are considered war crimes.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States and the Vice President of the United States.
But just weeks before the midterm elections, stampeded by the threat of looking weak on terrorism, Congress once again bowed to the administration's policy of cruelty.
It is a rare occasion when a president can sign a bill he knows will save American lives. I have that privilege this morning.
The new law stripped the courts of the power to hear cases based on Geneva. And in a provision that had been pushed hard by the vice president, it granted retroactive immunity to U.S. officials who might have carried out or ordered torture. In March 2004, after 832 days in U.S. custody, Shafiq Rasool had been flown home from Guantanamo. British authorities released him without charge. In January 2005, Mozambique was released. He had been in U.S. custody without being charged for more than 1,000 days. At least 500 men have been freed from the offshore prison with no explanation for their years behind bars. More than 250 are still there, most of them in solitary confinement. On June 12, 2008, the Supreme Court once again rebuked the administration, ruling that Guantanamo's prisoners have the constitutional right to challenge their detention. None of the prisoners will be automatically or quickly released. But the White House will now have to answer for their treatment and its practices in U.S. federal courts.
On June 9, 2009, Ahmed Gilani became the first Guantanamo prisoner transferred into the U.S. for trial. Upon arrival in New York City, he pled not guilty of helping al-Qaeda bomb U.S. embassies in Tanzania and Kenya in 1998. Genevieve Montree is Amnesty International spokesperson on terror, counterterror, and human rights. He said the Gilani trial will shed light on Bush administration policies and those who enforce them.
Post 9/11, this country really took the wrong path in trying to address many of these issues, whether it's terrorism, whether it's detention policy, whether it's the threats to national security. And Amnesty has consistently said that the most effective and the most useful way to defend this country and defend human rights is to follow the rule of law. Rather than create some other ad hoc program for people to be tried, whether it's in Guantanamo or elsewhere, that if you have people like this who clearly have been accused of quite monstrous crimes, the best thing to do is to afford them all the due process that anybody should have and to try them in a place where the public and the accused can understand all the charges which are being brought against them and they can be weighed fairly and then that justice can be rendered.
The question of torture is unclear in the Gilani case. However, Amnesty International says what happened to him was enforced disappearance. He was held incommunicado at CIA black sites and Guantanamo without protection of the law. And that, they say, violated the prohibition on torture or other cruel, inhuman, or degrading treatment.
Gilani was charged pre-9/11. He was picked up in 2004. And it was brought to Guantanamo in 2006. I think this case highlights that taking these people out of the justice system and having them disappear really serves no purpose. That ultimately what we really need to do is to find out as much as we can about these kinds of activities, not only about what happened to them, but also about what this individual did or what he's alleged to have done. And that two-year period is something that I think that we're probably going to find out something about during the course of the trial.
That's it for Sprouts, a weekly program produced in collaboration with community radio stations and independent producers across the country, bringing you local radio productions of national interest. The program is coordinated and distributed by Pacifica Radio. We heard Kevin Zeiss of Voters for Peace at disbartorturelawyers.us, Marjorie Cohn of the National Lawyers Guild at nlg.org, Genevieve Montree of Amnesty International at amnesty.org, and part of a Raging Granny song, Roll Out the Torture. Thanks to Michael Yoshida at Satellite Operations. If you or someone at your station has a radio production that you wish to rebroadcast on Sprouts to showcase it nationally, contact Air Traffic Controller Ursula Rudenberg at ursula@pacifica.org. I'm Dory Smith of Talk Nation Radio in Storrs, Connecticut. Thank you for listening and see you next week on Sprouts.